Welcome to this podcast series for the book Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemco, written by author Bob Hennigy, published and printed by ZG Serve LLC, copyright Deliberate Injustice, LLC. This podcast was produced by Connie Nesberry International, LLC. For more information, visit www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. This is Connie Nesberry, your moderator. I'm happy to be here today with exoneree Ken Wynemco discussing his work and goals for 2019. Ken, tell us what you're doing today.
Well, right now I'm having a good time with you and Terry and the crew here at Michigan State University, but for the podcast. But I'm doing quite a few things that I've been doing, you know, since I've been home. I'm proud to be actively involved in investigating other cases, you know, with people, men and women who are still wrongfully imprisoned. I'll help some of the clinics in their investigations. I'm proud to be on the Board of Commissioners of the Innocence Project at Cooley Law School in Lansing that worked to get my freedom. I'm on a Board of Advisors of the Michigan Innocence Clinic at the University of Michigan, which to this day has the biggest success rate of exonerations in the country. I'm very proud to be part of that organization, thanks to Dave Moran and Imran Saeed.
And Kenny, you studied law in prison, so are you helping them write legal?
I have written briefs or motions. Yes, I have. And I love doing it. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd be doing what I'm doing, believe me, Connie. But I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. I'm also on the board of directors of provinginnocent.org. That group was started by Bill Proctor from Channel 7, one of my dearest friends. And for the last few years, I'm really proud to be working with my friend Bob Hennigy, who I've known since grade school, in writing the book Deliberate Injustice, the true story of my wrongful conviction. I'm so proud of the job that Bob did on the book. I'm proud of the job that Terry Jumbin, our publisher, did in making it happen. And I'm so thankful to be sitting here next to you, getting the podcast underway. And I hope and pray that every one of your listeners will tell 10 other listeners to tune in, and so on and so forth down the line, so that each and every one of you can wake up, smell the coffee, stand up and join us in the fight to reform our criminal justice system. It's long, long overdue.
And is that the main thing you want people to get from the book, is that we all need to be vigilant and be working on this?
The main thing, I believe, Connie, yeah. I believe if anybody that reads the book will get a better, a more clear understanding of just how bad some of these wrongful convictions can be. And again, just as the title says, deliberate injustice, that's exactly, you know, what happens. More times than people want to admit it. You know, some people they're afraid to, they don't want to admit that our justice system is messed up. Well, you better, people, because it is. That's a fact.
It's a pretty scary thought.
It's a very scary thought. Yeah.
You know, when I read the book, one of the things I thought is that every person who is going to be a juror should read this before they sit on a jury.
You know, Connie, that's a very good point, and I agree with you. And as a matter of fact, I can remember when Bob and I had lunch with Carl Marlinga to give him a copy. We signed a copy of the book to give to Carl.
And he was the Macomb County prosecutor.
Yeah, and he's a judge now. Okay, he was a judge a year ago when this conversation happened. We were in downtown Mount Clemens having lunch. And Carl said he is going to try to have this book a mandatory read for all the appellate judges in the state of Michigan. And that's a great idea, and I commend Carl for having the guts and the honesty to say that, because I believe he's absolutely right.
Well, and you could go further and say every police officer going through training should read it.
Well, they should too, and more importantly, Connie, I think every law student should read this.
Definitely.
So they will get a better understanding of what they're looking at in the future.
And what they might be up against.
Sure.
If they're trying to defend
sure.
someone.
Sure. That's one reason why I enjoy talking to law students. And I've been all over the country, different from Harvard to University of Washington to USC. I've been all over the map talking to the law students, because it's time. You know, you can learn a law. I know how that goes, okay? You can learn a law, but learning a law and seeing what's actually waiting out there for you, that's a whole different story.
What are some of your major accomplishments? I know you've worked on some legislation, too.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to have some laws passed that I've been fighting for since the day I was released. The first one was the extension of the DNA statute that I was freed under. That statute was only supposed to last for 5 years. It took effect January 1st of 2001. It was set to expire in January the 1st of 2006. I remember I was still in prison when I read that law, and I told myself, man, this law was written just for me. This is exactly what I needed to prove my innocence.
Yeah.
And after I found, you know, when I found out about its expiration date on January 1st, 2006, I told myself, there's no way I'm gonna let that happen. So it took me, believe it or not, Connie, I go back and forth in Lansing. I don't know how many times I testified in front of both the House and the Senate. And we got a 3-year extension the first time, a 3-year extension another time. Okay, this is when Granholm was still in office. And then after Governor Snyder took office, I finally convinced our state reps and our state senators. And I told them, hey, you know what, I'm tired of driving up here every 3 years to get this, to argue the same problem. Let's take the time limits off. There shouldn't be time limits on truth and justice,
right?
You know. And one thing I want people to know, too, like after that, when that law was set to expire in 2006, that meant that inmates could not petition for DNA testing. The cops could do it forever. So where's the balance? Where's the balance of fairness?
Right.
There was none.
Right.
You know.
So did it get extended forever now?
Yeah, it took me 9 years to get that. There are no time limits on 9 years. Can you imagine that? The wrongful compensation bill I fought from day one took me 13 years. 13 years, I can't believe it, to get that law passed, and there's still flaws in it because of our past Attorney General, Bill Schuette. Mm-hmm. But now I've been in contact with the newly elected state reps and state senators, as well as Governor Whitmer and our new Attorney General, Dana Nessel, mm-hmm. who always backed me when I testified in front of them before. We're going to get it straightened out, but there's no, there are people like myself to this day, and I'm the one that started fighting for it from day one. I still haven't gotten a penny from the state. 95% of the exonerees in Michigan haven't got a penny. What's the holdup?
And say again, when you come out of prison, you have nothing. No house, no clothes, no...
You have absolutely nothing. That's part of the comp.
How do you live?
You're lucky if you do. You have to have good friends or family, like I did. But, back when I first came out, Connie, and this is a fact, if someone was in prison in the state of Michigan for a crime that they did commit and they're released on parole, the state would help them get housing, food stamps, okay, clothing, okay?
Job training,
that's correct, thank you. If someone was in prison for a crime they did not commit, such as myself and my fellow exonerees, the day that we are released from prison, we didn't get a penny. Nothing. They don't even tell you they're sorry. Just get out and, you know, that's
it.
Get
out of our hair.
Yeah.
That does not make any sense.
Now, if that doesn't enrage every citizen in this state, in a country, something is wrong with that person. Get real. Another thing that always get me angry, we have people in this country that are here illegally. They get more state help than someone that's been wrongfully in prison. One of our own people. Okay, what the hell is going on? What is the world coming to? People, if you don't understand that, God help you.
Bob said that you were able to meet one of your jurors that was on your trial. Tell us about that.
I did, and that I'll tell you, Connie, that does not happen in this country. His name is Jerry Innes. I had the pleasure of meeting him about a year or so ago. Bob and I, we had a book signing for Deliberate Injustice at Joe Dumars Fieldhouse. And Bob had contacted him to see if he'd be interested in talking to me. Thankfully, he agreed to it. His comments are in the book, as a matter of fact. Deliberate Injustice, the book. Another reason to buy the book, people.
So you're going to be shy and not tell us. You're going to make us buy the book, right?
No, I'll stay here 24/7 if I'm talking to you, if it'll help get one more person out. But yeah.
When you met this juror, what did he say about the trial?
He, remember him talking, we were talking about the snitch. He told me he didn't believe the snitch. He thought there was something was wrong. He didn't know about the evidence that was withheld. He said, right. that pissed him off, okay, yeah. Which it should.
That would piss me off.
He told me that if he'd have known about that evidence, there's no way he would have voted guilty. No way.
Do you mean the hidden tape?
The tape and the evidence that the DNA evidence that Osteen had hidden. If the cops would have done the right thing and presented that evidence, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
You shouldn't have even been arrested.
That's what the federal court said. There was not even a reason, a probable cause for arrest, quote unquote, from Judge Zatkoff.
So anyway, back to how you're doing today. What is there anything that you're doing about those kinds of things specifically, hidden evidence?
Well, yeah, and again, I felt this way ever since I've been home. You know, when you have police detective. A prosecutor or a judge or an attorney, these people all take an oath to uphold the law, right? Just as a doctor takes an mm-hmm. oath to, treat his patients. When you have people like that who take an oath to uphold the law and that deliberately break the law, as they did in my case, okay, and there's no consequences that these people pay. As long as that is allowed to exist, the problem of wrongful convictions will never, ever go away.
And are you working on legislation to
change
that?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I have a couple things to make that happen. And again, that's just common sense. And I've always said, if you get one or two detectives or prosecutors who hide evidence, or they suborn perjury by getting a snitch to lie, which is another thing that happened in my case. When they're allowed to break the law and there's no punishment, system will not work.
Tell us about exonerees, how many there are in Michigan and across the country.
Well, I'll tell you this, Connie. When I was released in 2003, I was number two, just the second person in Michigan to be released. The first was Eddie Joe Lloyd, who is a colored gentleman out of Detroit. He was released 8 months before I was. Eddie Joe did 17 and a half years for murder and a rape he did not commit. Unfortunately, Eddie got sick when he was in prison, and prison, healthcare in prison is, I don't even want to talk about it right now, it's a joke. After doing 17 and a half years in prison, Eddie Joe was gone within a year of his release. And I went to see Eddie Joe about a week before he passed away. I can remember it again. Look, I can picture it right now in my mind. And I went to see him, and I told him, Eddie Joe, I said, if the good Lord calls you home, I promise you I will keep up the fight to be the voice for other innocent men or women who are still wrongfully in prison. And as God is my witness, I will never, ever break that promise that I made to Eddie Joe. Never. And I think the past, I'll be home now 16 years this coming June, the record speaks for itself. Yeah, so I was number two at the time of my release in 2003. I was number 129 in the country. Now, today in Michigan, we had, I know Rico Phillips came home back in August. We're having a welcome home party at University of Michigan for our three newest exonerees. I think they're 89, 90, 91 now.
Oh, wow.
So we went from my being number two to them being number 90. I was, as I said, I was number 129 in the United States. Today, that number is 2,363. That is
an Innocence Network conference every year, right?
Every year.
Tell us about that.
Yep. This year we're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, this coming April. It's one of the most amazing, to me, now that I think about it, it's almost like a little Christmas to me. And I know it's like a Christmas for our newest exonerees, the first time they attend that conference. I'll tell you what, Connie, when you walk into the room, you can feel the electricity in the room.
Yeah.
You can. And I hope you come, you and Terry come down this to Atlanta with us this year. I know Terry was there in Memphis with us last year. It's so much bigger than it was. The first time I went was in, right after I got out, I was in Washington, D.C. That's where I got to meet Barry Scheck, first time I met Barry Scheck. But it makes me so happy to look and see how much it's grown over the years. And again,
yeah, that must be rewarding. And you've been a big catalyst.
I have been, and I'm happy. Also happy to tell you about this fact too. Back when I was freed, an innocent person, man or woman, black or white, I don't care who it is, an innocent person was being released on an average of once every 16 days. Now, and this is a fact, you can look it up on the Innocence Project website if you want, we're getting 4 exonerees a week. That's someone is coming home every other day.
Wow.
And it's still just the tip of the iceberg. If you don't believe me, wake up. Don't shut up. Stand up. Join the fight.
And like you said in an earlier podcast, you're estimating there's like 230,000 maybe innocent people in prison right now.
Right.
But
well,
like you said, that's probably the tip of the iceberg. There's probably more.
I think it is the tip of the iceberg. And I can remember, now that you mentioned that question, I can remember, I think the second time I did Mitch Albom's show, he asked my opinion. He said, Kenny, just based on the people that I met, he wanted to know what I thought the percentage of people in prison were actually innocent. I told him, I said, Mitch, just based on that, on the people that I met, I think it's between 10-12%. And Mitch said, you got to be kidding me. Well, then a few years ago, a report came out from the Justice Department. By their own estimates, 12-17%, minimum 12-17% of the people that are in prison in this country are actually innocent. Now, I'll tell you another fact. There are 2.3 million people in prison in the United States of America. We have more people in prison than Russia and China combined. That's a fact. So if you go at a flat 10%, okay, of the 2.3 million, right, you're looking at 230,000 people. And as you said, Connie, I have no doubt that is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
This shit has to stop. And I'm going to fight to make it stop for as long as I live.
Kenny, in, say, 5-10 years from now, if you could change anything you wanted to in the law or what's going on, what are, like, the top, 3 or 5 things that you would change?
The first thing I want to see, and it must happen, okay, is, as I mentioned earlier, When police officers or prosecutors hide evidence, suborn perjury, they have to pay a price. They must be prosecuted. If you commit a crime, you got to do the time. Okay? It's that simple. And I've also said before many times, Connie, if one or two cops or prosecutors, if they get prosecuted like that and sent to prison, everybody else will fall in line because they don't have the guts to go through the hell that me or my fellow exonerees went through. Let's see how they like it. Let's see how their family likes it. That's number one on my list. And one way or another, before I die, I'm going to have that law passed.
What else needs to change?
I have a problem with the trial process, especially for the closing arguments. Why is it, if the law is supposed to be equal for everyone, okay, when it comes to closing arguments, the prosecutor will give their closing argument. The defense attorney will give their closing argument.
Mm-hmm.
Then the prosecutor can
gets to rebuttal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, why does he get 2 swings? Why does the prosecutor get 2 swings and the defendant only 1?
defense attorney should be able to rebuttal too.
Well, I agree, but it should be one and one. That's equal, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know, in, during a prosecutor's rebuttal, the defense isn't allowed to object. So that what that means is, a prosecutor is he can tell all the lies he wants to,
mm-hmm.
and nothing can be done about it. So that would be number two on my list. The the sentencing guidelines that you know it, that bothers me, but most importantly, we have to stop these wrongful convictions from happening.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot let law enforcement, anyone in law enforcement, in the legal system, tell a lie or allow a lie to stand.
Yeah.
That's not the way it was meant to work. Another law that I'd like to see change, and this goes back to voting rights, okay, are the term limits. If you have a senator or a state rep that's doing a good job, if they've done a good job for 6 years, why can't they stay there? Let's say that our state passes a law. If that same law would exist for doctors, you like this doctor, you can only see this doctor for 6 years. Or you can only deal with this bank here for 6 years. After that, we want to make sure everything's fair. So, again, it comes down to common sense, I believe. If someone is doing a good job, let them stay and do the job. If you don't like the job they're doing, go cast a vote. We have hundreds of thousands of our veterans who sacrificed their life to give us that right.
I read that a high percentage of veterans are wrongfully convicted.
They are. That's scary, too. And, I love our military veterans. My dad served in the Pacific in World War II in the Navy. Two of his brothers did so as well. My son was in the Navy when I was wrongfully imprisoned. I have the utmost respect for our military veterans, okay? And when you're talking about veterans being wrongfully convicted, the first person that always comes to my mind is my dear friend Kirk Bloodsworth. Spent 11 years on death row. United States Marine, Purple Heart. Comes back home. Gets wrongfully convicted of rape and murder of a 6-year-old girl. There are far too many of our veterans that go through that.
And isn't Kirk the one that makes the rings?
Kirk is, yeah. He's.
Tell us about your ring.
Yeah, this ring, this is like my Super Bowl ring, Connie. Kirk makes a ring for every exoneree. It's a silver, big silver ring.
It looks like a Super Bowl ring.
It does, and it feels like it too. But it has bars, it's like a jail cell bars. And right in the middle of the bars, it says it's the word exoneree is on there. It says exoneree. Now, Kirk's ring that he has for himself and several other exonerees who have been on death row will say death row exoneree.
Mm-hmm.
This is a badge of honor to me, and I'm proud to wear it. And I wear it every time I speak out about getting more people involved.
Right.
You know, that's my way of honoring Kirk and our veterans. I would like to ask each and every person who does care about what I do, if people care about the other exonerees, my fellow exonerees, please stand up. It doesn't take that much to help. You can help any way. You can volunteer in some fashion. You can contact proveinnocence.org.
Okay, in Detroit.
Either the U of M Innocence Clinic or the Cooley Law School in Lansing.
Okay.
Or Deliberate and Just the Book. Whatever. If you have any comments, go to that website. Your comments will get back to me.
And what's the website again? Say it.
The website is, I'll be happy to say it, DeliberateInjusticeTheBook.com.
There's one more question I have for you, Kenny. Are you now today being able to enjoy life with your family, with friends?
Well, I'll answer that question this way, Connie. I'm enjoying it a lot more than I have since I first came home. I'm with I found the woman that I want to be with. I'm happy and thankful to have the opportunities that I've been given to speak out mm-hmm. about wrongful convictions and to to let the people know that we need help, and they can help us. The bottom line, Connie, by the words I say, if I can help bring home one more innocent man or woman mm-hmm. who's been wrongfully imprisoned, I'm happy. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks, Kenny.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We would like to give you a 20% discount for ordering the book, Deliberate Injustice, The Wrongful Conviction of Ken Wynemco, at www.deliberateinjusticethebook.com. Use code POD20. Order today to learn more about wrongful convictions and how this can happen to anyone. Again, your discount code is POD20.